In today's show, I talk with the 2014 Digital Principal of the Year, Derek McCoy, and he shares with us his definition of an incredible school leader, why you need to inspect what you expect, and how to intentionally build healthy relationships that even include conflict. Never take you for granted, listeners. Thank you for tuning in. I hope you enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where school leaders go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top influencers in education. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Daniel Bauer.
So Better Leaders, I am here today with Derek McCoy, and you are in for a treat. Derek has been fortunate in his career to have had some great experiences and made a difference helping kids grow and achieve. He served in urban, rural schools and districts as a reading specialist, math teacher, curriculum facilitator, middle and high school assistant principal, middle school principal, and director of curriculum and innovation. Derek's career goal is to be a part of a school and district leading and learning team that will promote innovative and difference-making learning and teaching practices that result in student and teacher growth. Continuing his growth and development is a large part of him diving into his PLN and committing to helping others build their networks. Derek's family, friends, and PLN have been instrumental in his success and impact. This includes being honored with recognitions like the 2014 NASSP Digital Principal and one of 25 North Carolina educators to follow on Twitter. Everything Derek does is about improving learning and teaching, making a difference in his school, his district, PLN, and to paraphrase a quote from Gandhi, to be the change he wants to see in the world and education. Derek, thanks so much for joining us on the show today.
Daniel, thank you so much for the invitation. I'm stoked to be here, man.
Hey, so let's stay with Stoke then. What got you inspired to pursue a career in education?
Actually, that 100% goes to my wife. So when I was in college, I was a political science major. And once I changed my majors a couple times from computers to computer science to something else, I don't know. You know how it is when you're trying to find your path.
Absolutely.
I ended up loving political science. I loved the teachers there, loved the department, and I loved the history and the theory part. And graduated there, got accepted to grad school, and I was going to be the next serious political theorist. You know, I was thinking about W.E.B. Du Bois, and you know, I want to be a thinker on a collegiate level. But, you know, so when we got married, moved to Atlanta in grad school, and just essentially my wife was like, you know, what are you doing? You know, every year that I've been in college, in the summers, I've worked with kids, worked with high school and middle school kids. And the last couple of years in college, I was a middle school math tutor. And I had great high school teachers who instilled just a desire for math in me. And I loved sharing strategies with kids. And so, you know, just after not even a year grad school, just I fell into a great teaching job and had a tremendous principal my first year, my second year, I should say. She and I are still good friends to this day. She knows my family extremely well. This is like 20 years later. We're just good friends. And I mean, when I tell you that she knows my family, she knows my family. And so she had some great assistant principals working under her, and they were great models. And I was able to reconnect with one of those assistant principals who I saw as the pinnacle of school leadership. A couple of weeks ago in New Jersey at ECET2, New Jersey, Pennsylvania. Her name is Tammy Bowling Jenkins. Incredible administrator then, incredible administrator now. And we just caught up. And when I tell you that just those models, they just helped me. They taught me about what it means to be an educator, but I saw what it was like to be a great education leader. And they just inspired me and, you know, they just put me on a good path. So I'm incredibly fortunate that, you know, my wife is an educator, too. I forgot to mention that piece. She's an elementary school administrator. So just God just puts you where you're supposed to be. And he kind of nudges you when that's supposed to happen. And I was just fortunate that those great people were there to help me.
Yeah, I agree. I couldn't agree anymore. I mean, he definitely guides your path. And, you know, I love that story because it's about forming relationships, but also, you know, staying connected. I remember when I got my first job in Marietta, Georgia, Derek. So that's right outside Atlanta. And I was exploring that area, and I climbed up Stone Mountain, and I called my favorite professor, Professor Arlette Willis, to let her know that I got a new, you know, my first position, and that I would be teaching middle school, sixth grade, English, language arts, and reading. And, you know, we connected and that sort of thing. It was great to share that with her. So we have these heroes, we have these models that we look up to, and you talked about that principal and that AP that you're still connected to, and you called them incredible school leaders. But can you unpack that? Can you define, can you give us examples of what made them so incredible?
Absolutely. And when I tell you that I'm fortunate, I give several presentations, you know, now, and when they come up, I tell what they do for me with the same consistency, because it was so profound. It's like it had yesterday. It's like it happened yesterday. So Dr. Sandra DeShazer, that's her name, and she's a retired principal now from Fulton County, Georgia. When she came in, our school went through a radical demographic shift over the summer. So we went from being a pretty middle class, affluent middle school to serving like 30% free and reduced, I would say, to 80% free and reduced, all apartment complexes, very transient population, very needy kind of thing over the summer. And then she came in and didn't miss a beat. So she kept our focus on high quality instruction and building relationships, period. You know, so, you know, when we were, this is my second, third year teaching. So, and I'm very new to the game. And when I'm trying to come in authoritarian, she's like, nah, that's not it. That's not it. That's just not it. And then she hired Tammy, Miss Bowling Jenkins at the time. And she was like, nah, that's not how we do it. You know, you got to talk to these kids. And I was like, okay, cool. So, you know, I started, it was a gradual shift. It took me a couple of years to get that good and right, you know. And, but then, you know, after a couple of years in that kind of environment, I was an awesome teacher. I was cool. Knowing the math was never the question. It was about becoming attuned with the kids and what they need. And then being a good middle school educator. So working with my team and wrapping support around my team. So my first team was, I think I was like 26 years old, very young. I was on a team with with two ladies. They taught me how to be a teacher. They taught me how to be a teacher. Miss Dyson, who was her 33rd year, and then Miss Vital, I think Miss Vital was approaching her 20th year or whatnot. These ladies, man, when I tell you that they could, Miss Vital could look into the heart of a child. She could look into the heart of a child, and nothing, and everything would get right instantly. And I was like, I want to do that. Still can't do it like she did, but I want to do that. And Miss Dyson, when I tell you she is an instructional planner, good Lord, they taught me how to be a teacher. So just a lot of incredible experiences. But getting back, Dr. Shazer, one thing that she said, and it's always stuck with me, and I say it to this day, inspect what you expect. So this is me as a third or fourth year teacher. I don't have any designs at this point to be an administrator, but she always said that. That's why she was in our classrooms, and that's why she had these conversations, you know, and inspect what you expect. So inspect is popping into classrooms, giving feedback. Inspect means having conversations with teachers in the hallway about, hey, how's it going? What's this and what's that? Inspect is you not taking anything for granted. You know, you walking up and down every hallway two or three times a day and looking in corners and going into the restrooms and, you know, just having that presence and having to be a part, not wanting to be a part, having to be a part of conversations, of plannings, and being an integral part there so that people know that, you know, hey, she's checking on us, but then, yeah, she's checking on us, you know, that kind of thing. So, and not in a threatening way, you know, not in a threatening way by any means. And I model this myself. When there are things that become problematic, they don't become about, you know, riding people up or anything like that. It's like, hey, look, this is what happened. And we know this. Tell me about it. What can we do better? And let's make sure that we do better. Inspect what you expect. And man, I mean, 20 years later, I tell that is an integral part of how I do. So you know, just gives me goosebumps a little bit just thinking about that, because I even made a poster about that and put it above my chalkboard at the time. Inspect what you expect.
Yeah, that's served you well over the years. And, you know, you talked about, too, developing relationships with kids to get the most, you know, out of them and to build that classroom culture. Obviously, that I would think, I know it translates to working with the faculty and building that school-wide culture. Besides what you just shared there, do you have any tips for the listeners in terms of building high-level relationships with your staff?
Oh, I don't think there's a formula to it. You know, I think of Jimmy Casas and he saying that he has the three most important things that a school leader can do is build relationships. And you just have to be intentional. And that's a word that I get from Baruti Caffelli. You have to be intentional, 100% purposeful. And conversations that you have, they have to be a part of your day. You cannot afford to spend a day in your office and ignore or neglect anything that's going on. You have to be a part of what's going on in that school building and what's being said and what's being built. So all of that isn't formal planning conversations. Most of that is the stuff that happens in the hallway. You know, sometimes it's checking on a teacher's child. Other times it is a conversation about how's planning going. It's a first year or 21st year teacher asking, how's it going? How can we improve? What can we make better? Hey, tell me what you think about, you know. So a prime example is last week I asked my assistant principal to create a survey on school culture and send that out to our experienced staff. You know, so this is like our second or third survey that we've done this year. And the first two have been targeted at different populations. You know, so like the first one was for people new to the building. Second was for, you know, another group. And this one was for our more experienced staff. So I just wanted to see, you know, what do you think about the culture shift that's occurring in our school building? So you have to be intentional and having those conversations, and you have to be willing to hear stuff that you don't want to hear. You know how they say, don't ask a question if you're not ready to hear the answer to it. You have to be willing to hear stuff, and you have to be willing to not jump to 10 when you don't hear stuff and, you know, burn down any structures or whatnot, and keep a good head and really just be willing to be heard and be ready to listen, not just ready to respond. You know, I think so many times we're so ready to be heard, you know, give me the stage so I can talk kind of thing. We just can't be quick to give our opinion or think that we have the answer to everything. You know, I literally told somebody today that sometimes I wear my I don't know badge too proudly. You know, I'm ready to tell people, I don't know. You know, ask me what can we do about these kids not turning homework? I don't know. I don't have all the answers, but, you know, let's talk about what the problem is and let's try something and hopefully it'll work. And if not, then we'll keep learning and until we get something that is working for us. So you have to embrace that conversation. You have to embrace those talks, because that part is not about job security. That part is about building culture and just building up your school. So school leaders can't do anything in a vacuum or by themselves. We need teachers a whole lot more than they need us.
Oh, absolutely.
So we have to make sure that we're doing that part.
Yeah, you know, in that example too of kids not turning homework, I've heard that pretty much at every school that I've worked in.
Every school.
Yeah,
every school.
Yeah. And you know, I also either have the confidence / self-awareness or something else that, you know, I do that I don't know as well, because I don't know. And there's a lot of people much smarter than me in the building, and I want to leverage their IQ and experience to help problem solve. But we also have those that like to really maybe just complain and whine. And I'm wondering when those discussions happen, like, oh, the kids aren't doing the homework. They never turn in the homework. And then they get on that, you know, negative roller coaster, so to speak. How do you keep those conversations focused towards solutions and positive outcomes? You know, at what point do you cut people off? Because I think, you know, they might need to get a little steam out, maybe vent a little bit, be heard, but, you know, we can't spend all our time there. We got to figure out, like, how are we really going to address this?
Yeah. So I tell you, again, I don't know a formula for it. I don't know a formula for how much to let somebody vent versus how much to let somebody vent, then how much is enough. So I'm just very clear with my staff about what my intentions are. My intentions are not to stifle anybody's voice. So if you have a complaint, no. And then I don't want to, we're not going to make this a gripe session or whatever. You know, we just can't be about bitching about any and everything. That just cannot be the case. So I let them know that if we got something to say that's worthy, then it needs to be heard. But we can't just come with problems, problems, problems. If you bring a problem, work earnestly at bringing a solution. Okay. And if you don't have a solution, then let's listen to what's around the table and be willing to hear those solutions. And if you still don't have a solution or if nothing sounds good, then we're not going to be stuck on the problem. We're not going to be stuck on the problem. We're going to be stuck on a student-centered, and that's a big, big piece, a student-centered solution. If we hear a problem and we hear a student-centered solution that might be an inconvenience to the adults in the room, then if the student-centered solution might be some extra work or an inconvenience, then, you know, there's really no decision in that one. We have to go with that student-centered solution. That's a hard piece to swallow because, you know, a lot of people, they equate staff morale with staff agreeing with everything or staff feeling happy about everything. And you know, staff morale does imply a piece of how happy or satisfied the staff is. But ultimately, we have to agree on following or abiding by the vision and the mission of our school building. And our vision and mission includes creating a student-centered environment, learning, achieving, and this, that, and other. And we can always make a fallback to that, you know. So, and I'm fortunate that our staff, you know, we do that. That's what we're building. I work with some great teachers, and that's one thing that we commit to doing. At the beginning of the spring of last school year, we worked on what's called My Understandings, and they're kind of group norms, and we all know how norms work, like in PLCs. PLCs, you have agreed upon rules about how you're going to govern yourselves. So we developed our understandings, and some of our understandings are, there's a couple of powerful ones. One is there's no perfect decision, but make a decision. So, yeah, we sit down and, hey, we got X problem. So, man, A could be a solution, B could be a solution, or C could be a solution. We're not going to be stuck on, you know, we're not just going to be get on a hamster wheel and stay there for an hour. Make a decision, and then whatever decision we make, when we leave the room, everybody's on board. Another one is weigh in, then buy in. So no one sits quiet during a meeting. Everybody has to contribute one word or 20. Does not matter. Everybody has to contribute because weigh in, everybody weighs in, and then everybody buys in. And it may not be a perfect decision, but we're going to make a decision. And then another one is that every disagreement that we have, every piece of confusion that we have, it must be communicated respectfully. So if you're confused, say you're confused, say why you're confused so we can clear up confused. If you disagree, say why you disagree so we can talk about it and then move on from it. And we won't be stuck there. Another one, this will be the last one I talk about. There's a couple more, but it's assume the best intent. You know, so this helps me. So, Daniel, if you and I are on opposite ends or something, we're going to go into this meeting and we're going to talk about it. And assume the best intent means that you and I are going to have varying viewpoints. But assume the best intent means that I know that it's not personal. I know that what you're saying is not personal. We're going to have a professional conversation and then we're going to make a decision. And then I have assurance that you've communicated everything that you need to say. And then we're going to leave that room on the same accord. So it can't be about how happy you are all the time or us fulfilling all the wishes of every teacher. That can't be the case. We couldn't do that even if we wanted to. But we can make a good student-centered decision. And then this is one way that we ensure that that happens.
I love those my understandings, and I think that's so valuable. You know, I hope the listeners go back, rewind that specific part, and really marinate on what you just shared there, because it's so powerful in terms of how groups can operate and like that word says, I mean, just understand, you know, what's going on within the group. It's those shared commitments and really just encourages healthy communication and conflict and getting through all that kind of stuff.
Boom.
To what you said, to that student-centered solution, which I love. So thank you so much for sharing that.
Boom. Absolutely. That talks about how healthy an organization is. You know,
right.
There's a book, The Advantage by Lencioni.
I'm going to give you a boom. I love that guy.
Yeah, he wrote Five Dysfunctions of a Team. Yeah, and that one blew me away about 5 years ago. That one blew me away. But the advantage, it doesn't talk about just school cultures or cultures in general. It talks about what a healthy culture looks like. And a healthy culture can handle some disagreement. You know what I mean? So many of us think that a healthy school culture or that we were a great school when everybody agreed with everything. It's not healthy. It's not healthy. Healthy is, I think it's blue, you think it's green, and then we mix it up. It might be polka dot, or it might be striped, or it might even be red, but that's the deal. And that's how we come out better, and that's how we keep it focused not on us, but on students.
Yeah, it all starts with trust, according to Lencioni, and you need that conflict, because if everybody agrees, you're not going to get to the best ideas.
Without a doubt.
You know? And so I encourage everybody to check out The Advantage. We've read that with some of my coaching clients, and that was my favorite book a couple years ago. Last year was Essentialism. And this year we talked about leadership pitfalls and things that can really, you know, tear down a leader. And I had the author on the podcast just a little bit ago with that, too.
Okay, cool.
So speaking of leadership mistakes, what would you consider your worst, or what is a leadership mistake that really impacted you, and what did you learn from it?
Well, I'll tell you one that I have to wrestle with regularly, and it's how much – it's accurately weighing or understanding where my staff is. Is my staff at the point where I think they are in their journey in the culture shift? So a couple stories in my current school or in my previous school. In my previous school, I was there for 3 years as a principal, and that's actually where I got the Digital Principal Award. But it's kind of similar, same stories in both, in that, you know, I was there for a couple of years and things were moving, you know, things were moving. In my first school, you know, we brought in a lot of technology. Last year, my current school, technology is already here, but we just brought in just shifted from teacher centered to some more student centered practices and talks and awarenesses and that kind of thing. So as we're moving along, you know that some staff is diving in, some staff is kind of hesitant, some staff is swimming in the water, some staff is standing comfortably on the beach. So, you know, when it's time to create some opportunities for autonomy, or when you have opportunities for some groups to make some decisions on their own, and that's what it is. You're hoping for more for some student centered to see some evidence of some student centered planning, and you don't always see it. And those kinds of times are disappointing. Those kinds of times are disappointing. You want your groups to be planning and talking or making decisions at a deeper level, but it's not quite there. So sometimes that comes out instructionally. Sometimes it comes out like they'll revert back to some old school teaching methods, like even though there are tables in a room, you can teach to students in rows, even though there are tables in the room.
Yeah.
You know, so you can see reversion in that sense. Sometimes when you're giving students some freedom and some practices, and those practices might be working, and it's just tweaking that needs to be out, but you know, we might want to tighten up and just really go back to just go back to some old school hardcore kind of stuff. Having to go back and have those talks with teachers like, look, you know, I think I understand your intent, but that's not really what happened here. And let me tell you why that's not what happened here. Having those kind of conversations are tough. And while it's not the most difficult, I say it's difficult because for the school leader, you invest a lot in those plans. You invest a lot in building that vision. And like Lencioni says, you don't communicate, you over communicate that vision. You know, you really put it in a lot of systems, and staff agree and staff gets it. I'm an optimist. I think the staff gets it. I think staff understands and they know what the deal is. But, and you know, no fault of their own. This is just how humans are. You know, when we've had so many years to practice it one way, our inclination is to go back to the way that we've practiced it, the comfort. And I'm not going to say this is for every leader, but this is for me. It's a bit disheartening that you got to go back and like, yeah, we kind of missed the boat here again, because here's why. So let's try this. And then it's a matter of going back to inspect what you expect. And you constantly have to do that. That leadership piece can be a lonely role because you're the one that has to have those conversations. And that's on you. When they get in your purview, you know, you got to have those conversations. I can build up my assistant principals to have those conversations, and I do. And sometimes I'll even ask my department chairs to have those conversations. But, you know, ultimately the leader has to have those talks, and those other people have to come in as support. And then individual talks have to morph into group talks. You know, how many times do we hear a group say, why don't you just talk to the one that's the problem? You know, why don't you just talk to the one that's giving you the problem? We do. I do. But then, you know, if you got a group of eight and you had talks with three of the eight, then, you know, you need to have a group talk. So to me, it's that piece, because I really think, again, it's the optimist in me. I really think people want to do it and want to get it. Then having to have those talks, like, you know, you missed that mark again, it can be disheartening for them. And I don't want to. No one wants to have those kind of conversations, but we have to have those kind of conversations for the kids.
And let's pause here for a message from our sponsors. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at betterleadersbetterschools.com/book. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. You know, I'm just like you. I'm a school leader that wants to get better every single day, and that's why I created a free gift for you called The 15 Questions to Unlock Your Leadership Potential. You can grab it today for free by texting the word UNLOCK NOW to 33444. That's UNLOCK NOW to 33444, and The 15 Questions to Unlock Your Leadership Potential will be delivered straight to your inbox. And now back to our show. Derek, what would you say if I asked you, how do you want to be remembered as a school leader?
Oh, man, that's a good one. How do I want to be remembered? So I think about my time right now at West Rowan Middle School. Great school. We're a rural school. We're 1-to-1. I came into just an incredible situation. You know, this is a school with already good practices in place, and we just needed the principal before me retired. She completed the first year of the 1-to-1 deployment, so I came in the second year. So I'm able to come in and just share some of the things I've learned from my PLN and whatnot. And these last 2 years have been fun. I see the 7th and 8th graders who've been there with me for a couple of years, and what is making me happy and what I like for them to remember, what I like to be remembered from them, is we've brightened up our school. Our school went from Daniel, I need to show you these pictures, went from dreary colors like white and seafoam green or whatever that color was to just some truly bright colors, a brightly colored school building where, you know, kids are smiling and kids are happy. We created some flexible learning spaces where kids really are ready to get out of their classrooms and go to other spaces to do their work. And they're happy about that. they're happy that they can get, that they're encouraged to get out of their rooms and to do work. So smiling kids, kids who are remembering some great years at West Rowan Middle School. I want kids to, in our community, to think that, wow, you know, between kindergarten and 12th grade, my best years in school were my middle school years. Right now, yeah, right now I got parents who, you know, oh, I hated middle school. You know, it was this, it was that, and the other. But, you know, a lot of our kids are coming to school smiling, high-fiving me, and, you know, I get hugs daily. You know, it's great stuff. So I want that piece for the kids. I want teachers to remember we put in a lot of hard work, and I want them to think back. So I want my teachers at the end of this year to think back to 3 years ago before we got there and look back and be like, man, you know, we came a long way. And yeah, it is different. It had to be different. And we're proud of that work. I'm proud of how we're looking differently at our role as instructional designers. I'm proud that that our kids are really critical thinkers. They're great communicators, and you know, they're willing to take risks, and we're a part of that. And I want our community to really think of our school as a place that incubates thinkers and problem solvers. We're working on PBLs this year, and my goal is this year or next year that we start bringing some community-based PBLs, and our kids can make some presentations to some commissioners or to some board members and be like, hey, you know, we know that our downtown is dwindling. What if you guys tried this? Or we know that teachers aren't paid what they need to. What if we tried this? So
do you see that coming out? You know, I was reading that engagement versus empowerment article, and you're starting to get there with the empowerment piece. And I know, so I read, if I remember correctly, some of your teachers are experimenting with that 20% genius hour type time. I think they call it research something. I forget. They had 2 hours. I remember that.
Yeah, radical research.
Radical research. Yeah, I like that. But do you see that coming out as an outgrowth of those type of classes?
100%. 100%. So this year we were able to hire some great new teachers to the school building, and they were just doing some pockets of great things where they were previously. So one of my teachers, Jennifer Heggie, she was doing genius hour at her elementary school. And, you know, she was like, I'm doing it here. And I'm like, look, you know, yes, that's, you know, that's why I hired you.
Get
to it. And so she went straight at it. And some of the other teachers in the school saw it. One on the seventh grade hall. My office is on the seventh grade hall. And you ought to see how they implement it. So I love the spin, the creative spin that they put on it. Seventh grade teacher, I mean, Ms. Brawley is a blended learning. I mean, she is awesome with some blended learning, particularly some states, developing stations or whatnot. One of her stations is a genius hour. It's a cool model to see, man. And then it's particularly cool because she goes, is her coaching cycle for these kids. It is awesome to see. So she brought this idea from seeing the sixth graders doing this, and the radical researcher piece came in when Ms. Brawley told her seventh graders, I got this from Ms. Heggie's sixth grade class. The seventh graders like, oh, we're not going to, if sixth graders are doing this, we're not going to do this. It can't be genius hour. We got to call it something else. So she came up with the term radical researchers. So right now she's just making this passion based inquiry. You know, what are you passionate about? I found out one of my seventh grade girls is a big game hunter.
What?
Yes. And found out she was a seventh grade hunter. I had a visitor in the school that day, and I was walking her around, and she says, yeah, so, you know, I'm a big game hunter. And she started throwing these statistics at us. And I was like, what? And yeah, and started showing me some pictures of her hunting. And I forget what her topic was, but, you know, I don't know what question or what issue she was addressing. I don't remember, I should say. But, you know, just imagine that. I mean, we have that sitting in our school building, just that kind of thing. So in the next couple of years, once we really start tapping into these kids' passion and we start directing that and we start applying that inquisitiveness into their other subjects. You know, our rural community has some issues, but these kids can start solving problems before they leave high school, and they can be part of the solution. That's what you want. That's how I want kids to be remembered. I want this school to be remembered as, yeah, we had these problems in our communities, but 17 of us got together and we thought about it over lunch. And we did some research over a couple of years, and I mean, over a couple of months. And here's a proposal. So who can help us get this up and going? And that's a school that I want our community to remember and embrace.
Yes, that's a beautiful picture that you paint there. And man, if listeners could see your face as you started talking about this stuff, you really lit up, man. So Derek, that's some cool stuff happening at your school, and I look forward to hearing about how it spreads throughout the community. As a digital principal and a winner of that award, what are some of the creative and interesting ways that you connect online or utilize technology in your own leadership?
Some of the ways I connect, one of the ways I use technology in my leadership.
Yeah, I'm just curious. I'm guessing the listeners are relatively tech savvy. You know, they're listening to this on a podcast. They want to get better, that, you know, improve. So they connect and consume a lot of content that way. But I'm wondering if there's anything that you could bring that just might be a little out of the ordinary, how you use technology or connect online.
I got you. I understand. So I'll tell you how I use technology. One aspect, we can go to a couple things, but I wouldn't be the educator I am if I was not on Twitter, period. Just period. So I have a cousin who's thinking about becoming a teacher, and this is what I told her, and it blew her away. She's got an MBA, and, you know, so she knows LinkedIn and this kind of stuff and that kind of stuff. Yep. And she follows me on LinkedIn, but she was like, what do you mean? And I told her. And I got inspiration and resources and support and challenge from my PLN, and I commit to it every day. So this piece is Twitter. I think the next one is going to be Voxer. When we met at WGEDD in Kansas City, one of my sessions, I talked about how I think Voxer is the next PLN builder.
Yep, yeah.
There's just all kind of groups that you can join, contribute, share. You know, and you could do text or you could do pictures or the biggest thing, you could do voice. And, just being able to talk, to give a stream of conscience for about 45 seconds on the topic. Like, hey, man, I had this problem. This kid said this, or these teachers have said this, kind of blew me away. I was thinking about this, but what do you guys think about that for a solution?
Right.
And then being able to hear from 10, 20 people that I respect, that I know, or some that I don't really know, but they might have gone through it. They haven't gone through it, but they read something, or they had no idea, or they added more questions to it. It's all good. I need that. You know, we have this myth of the omnicompetent or super competent administrator that sits in his or her office and has all the answers, and that's it's just hog.
It's crazy.
It's crazy.
Right.
It is nuts. Yeah. Like I said, I wear my I don't know badge regularly. Mr. McCoy, how are we going to motivate these African-American girls to do this? I don't know. I don't know. But I commit to connecting with my PLN for some questions, for some answers, or something. You know what I mean? And I put it out there, and I listen. Got some good friends who have some questions to answer that way. And then another aspect is I make a point to resource my teachers. The stuff that I find on Twitter, and have a weekly blog for our staff that we share just weekly news, that we share some inspiration with. We have a weekly calendar, and then there's a resource section. That resource section is just like 4 or 5 or 6 tweets, just stuff that I think is going to benefit my staff. We're going to have a makerspace in place by December. So every now and then I'll put an article on makerspace or PBLs or guided instruction or depth of knowledge or blooms or just whatever resources I think will be good there, and give them some readings. Or it could be a blog post that somebody wrote that I think is pretty great. And, you know, every now and then we'll make reference of it, or we'll just build that in part of our conversation. So, you know, Twitter, I hope it can't go anywhere, because, like I said, I wouldn't be the educator I am without it. Some of my best friends right now start off as one tweet, and that was it.
Yeah,
that's it.
No, I couldn't agree, you know, anymore. I mean, you're absolutely right. Twitter is the place to connect if you're an educator, and Voxer's quickly right on its heels. It pains me to say that. I wish it had some better notifications going on with Voxer.
Oh, so I agree.
Like, tag people in the voice memos that you leave. But outside of that, it's an incredible, incredible app. And I point listeners back to episode 63. This is number 70. But the creators of LeadUp Chat, and they've got a powerful set.
Yes, I'm part of it.
Yes,
I'm
sir.
Part of it.
Yeah,
I'm
powerful
part of it.
Saturday morning Twitter chat and Voxer group. You know, those guys are great to connect with, along with, you know, Derek here on the show. So, hey, just a couple, two fun questions. We'll go quick through those, and then we'll drop the hammer on the last one. But what do you do for fun, Derek?
Read comic books and just get with my kids and have fun. So I've been a comic book reader since I was 12, I believe. And
so this might mean something to you then. I got Spawn number one signed by Todd McFarlane.
Shazam!
Bam! Seriously? Yeah, I got that one signed.
Man. Partner, I know you don't leave that one around. That's what's up, sir.
Yeah.
So yeah, and my kids are my daughter's 22, my son's 27, and I got them reading comic books. So interesting story. My son reads comic books. He catches up when he can. My daughter started reading comic books. Didn't really sit right with her. At my comic book shop, where I bought my comic books, she started reading anime and manga.
Yeah.
And then in middle school, she started watching Japanese game shows online. And when my daughter graduated high school, she was fluent Japanese.
What? Wow.
And I tell that story on the regular. She was a Japanese tutor in college all 4 years.
That's incredible.
That is insane. So you're talking about a different type of learner today. I talk about my kids regularly.
Wow. Yeah. I was listening to a podcast right before recording this one, and the guy was talking about learning languages sort of quickly. He recommended getting comic books in the English and then the translated form, and picking up language that way. And it sounds like, you know, kind of your daughter absorbed Japanese that way as well. Real quick, Japanese anime or manga, have you ever read the Spawn version of that?
The Spawn version?
Yeah.
No, I haven't.
Okay, so I got the Spawn anime or manga version. You know, you read it right to left instead of left to right. Offline, if you want to share your address in the Skype chat, I'll just drop that in the mail, man, and you could check it out.
That's what's up. Yeah, that'd be great. That's cool.
Yeah, I'll send that to you. Okay. Hey, I'm trying to beat everybody I meet in Rock, Paper, Scissors, even though I met you, we didn't play. But if we meet again, Derek, you got to be honest. What would you throw first, rock, paper, or scissors?
Rock.
Okay, that's good, because I'm going to beat you. All right. I'm collecting data, man.
Okay.
All right, here's the last question. You're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by your budget or resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you build your dream school, and what would be your top three priorities?
Paying teachers six-figure salaries and creating a robust interview process for teachers. So demo lessons, just the whole thing. So I want to pay teachers what they're truly worth, show them the value I put in them. But then at the same time, you got to bring it. You got to bring it to work in this school. Open, flexible environments. So number two is open, flexible environments in this school. I want a lot of windows. Not quite open walls, but open-ish environments and places where classes can get together and we can do some presentations. I want this school built for presentations. I want this school built for kids to talk and to share, and for us to really tap into what kids can show us and what they can do, and just really kill all this foolishness that this fixation we got with test scores. And we do need a measure. Don't get me wrong. We do need some kind of measure that kids can grow. I want us to focus on kids growing rather than trying to hit some kind of arbitrary number.
Derek, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
So parting words is get connected. If you're a connected educator, keep recruiting somebody. If you're not a connected educator, and a connected educator is somebody who's building up their professional learning network using social media, get connected. Connect with me on Twitter, and I'd be glad to start you on your path. I'm McCoy Derek on Twitter. My website is McCoyDerek.com. Skype is McCoy Derek. Voxer is McCoy Derek. Hit me up. It's all good. I work with principals and other educators, and you know, this is what we talk about. We talk about us growing ourselves so that our kids can truly be the winners.
Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Derek. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Derek in the search bar. The show notes page will pop up where you'll get the highlights of today's episode and links to all the resources and the best way to connect. Derek, thanks again for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Thank you so much for having me. You guys have a great one.
Better Leaders, thank you for joining us on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Visit us at betterleadersbetterschools.com, a blog and podcast made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Have you gotten value from today's show? Help me reach even more listeners by leaving a 5-star rating and review. Click the podcast artwork and press the Show Some Love link to leave an honest rating and review. A long, long time ago in a galaxy far away, patrons would sponsor artists to create something the patron valued. Would you consider becoming a patron of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast? If you found this podcast valuable, if the show has pushed your thinking about leadership, and if you've benefited in any way, then I would be honored if you would become a sponsor. Sponsorship is easy. Head over to patreon.com/better or click the link in the show notes to become a patron for as little as $1 a month. If you pledge 10 bucks a month, I'll send you one of my favorite leadership books every other month. That's patreon.com/better or click the link in the show notes. Do you have a question or need some leadership advice? I want to connect with you. I read every email, tweet, snap that's sent to me. Links are in the show notes to connect via email and social media. Better Leaders, Better Schools is a proud member of the Edu Podcast Network, podcast for educators, podcast by educators. You can listen to more great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.